This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Health and Living, and we're having our monthly show with Dr. Rajini Saranandan, our consultant developmental pediatrician. And today's topic is, should students repeat the school year? I mean, we've seen schools reopening in March this year. They closed again in May. Our online classes have been on since. I mean, let's not talk about last year, right? They lost out on so many days of school. And as of now, schools are expected to reopen in October for exam year students first, and then in phase two and three states. And after that, vaccinations will be opened up for children in mid-September for those 16 and 17-year-olds. And then 12 to 15-year-olds with chronic illnesses will be vaccinated. So the reopening of schools nationwide has been deferred, as I said, to 3rd of October. We're going to be seeing these kids come back to school. But what we want to do is explore the impact of all these months-long closure on students' learning. What does that mean for them? What are the expectations of parents should have for their children in this school year? And what educators should focus on while children are going back to their classrooms? So on the line joining us also, Tan Cheng Yi. She's an educational psychologist. Welcome, Cheng Yi. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
And how are you, Dr. Rajini?
Good. Thanks, Mira.
Yep. Let me just quickly start with Cheng Yi. And before that, if you have a question on should students repeat the school year and, you know, your anxieties perhaps of your child losing out on, so many months of school, give us a call. Our phone lines are open, 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Cheng Yi, many parents are worried that their children won't be able to catch up with rest of the syllabus and move on to the next year. What's your take on some of these concerns? Are they really valid?
Yeah, I think that this one whole year with the online learning has been very disruptive for many, but maybe we could look at, you know, the different groups of children. I think it's valid, especially if you've got children who are perhaps more vulnerable. And I think we're talking about, we're very diverse in how we are affected by the pandemic. We're starting with the very poor, those who have poor internet, and maybe those who don't have adults, you know, who are dedicated time to look after them, because like it or not, many of us parents have been shouldering a lot of the teaching and the learning from the home. And maybe those who already have, were left behind even before the pandemic started, those with special educational needs, you know, who find it difficult to learn without somebody near them or without the social aspects of schooling. Perhaps those with low self-motivation, perhaps, and those who have got little self-discipline will also find it a little bit harder. So I think these groups of children, plus those who have mental health issues, I think in the pandemic, you know, we've really seen the anxiety and the depression increasing a lot over the last 16 months. So I think this is a real valid concern for many of the parents.
Should be.
Are vulnerable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Will the children be able to catch up? Let's assume that these are, typically developing children. Will they have lost out? And concerned should we be about the fact that they need to catch up?
Yeah, I think children in general are quite resilient, right? If they're quite resilient. And also, we need to put into perspective that we are all in this together. It's not that some of them have been left behind. You know, everyone's in the pandemic is what I mean. So in that sense, I think everybody is inconvenienced and to a certain extent. And so if we put in the right measure, the right steps, and really plan, you know, to help children to come back to school intentionally, taking into consideration there are different groups of children, some more further behind, some are okay, and some will just carry on like usual. I think that kind of thinking would be helpful if we can have that kind of planning.
Dr. Rajini, what are you hearing from the parents?
Interesting. I was just having this discussion with many parents in the last few weeks, as some parents plan to, for their children, you know, for the following year. And I think, firstly, the uncertainty, are we going to have more lockdowns? Secondly, especially for those who are supposed to be transitioning from preschool to primary school, a lot of anxiety about the fact that their children have not been attending school much of this year, because a lot of preschools also have either closed or parents have been anxious about sending their kids to preschool. So, you know, children who are transitioning from preschool to primary school, it's a big leap. Yeah. You go from smaller classrooms, a more play-based environment, teachers who have time to hug. Okay, maybe we don't hug anymore, but have that time to give each child a little bit more attention. So even those who come from Tadika Kemas or Tadika Pasti, you know, the public preschools, and even the ones who have preschools in a normal government school, preschool classes are smaller. Teachers approach learning in a more different way. And now kids are moving on to year one, where they're expected to sit in a classroom with maybe 40 on average, take instructions, having not taken group instructions for a long time. Basic things like that for a lot of the families that I deal with. How's my child going to be able to go to the toilet? He hasn't been practicing going to a public toilet because we've been stuck at home. We haven't even gone out. We haven't used the R&R on our way back to Balik Kampung. So, you know, things that maybe for a typically developing child, parents don't really think about these things, but some of those children will have some of these difficulties. And then there's the anxiety of the pandemic itself. What if there's another lockdown? How are we going to face that? How am I going to afford to give my children remedial classes? You know, a lot of families have had incomes drop quite significantly. And I'm talking about middle income families here, let alone those from the lower income bracket. So I think a lot of anxiety, not just about learning, but the whole social aspect of going to school, being able to mingle with friends, follow through with rules, etc., I think is a huge anxiety for parents.
I've realized that we have, we are anal about two things. One is the school year, and secondly, the exams. When you take the exams away, everybody, the parents all become like, oh no, well, this is the lost generation. They can't sit for exams. How on earth are we supposed to know how they're actually doing? I totally disagree with it. But maybe you can share your views on what is the value of a school year, Chengyi? What is that? What does that actually, or are we overthinking this?
Yeah, I think as Dr. Rajisi said, the social aspect of schooling, I think we use a lot of that as a benchmark, isn't it? So when we see other children, you know, we can sort of measure where our children are going in relation to their peers. And that has been missing because they have been at home. So I think we looking at the value of the benchmark, this one school year is so precious, not just in the academic learning. There's so many things, isn't it? Where you talk about friendship, bonding, you know, learning all sorts of skills like planning and organizing. And therefore, you know, the transitioning from one school stage to another is so important. The leadership skills, that's another thing. So those are all building blocks that you get in the one whole year. It's such precious time, and especially the childhood is not very long. There's a lot for every child. You know how when we were young, we would think that the year passes very slowly. Now that we are older, things passes so quickly. So for a child, that time is so like the everyday, you know, they enjoy at school. But I have to say that there's a lot of diversity in the classroom as well. So in the sense that, you know, one classroom or one school year, there's so many kids' ability level, right? So you do fall into that. And the school phase of schooling, pro-primary schooling, has got that time for you to catch up because everyone developed at a different pace. So even if you come in a little bit slower, you know, there's chance to learn and to catch up and things like that. And similarly, as they go back into the pandemic, you know, if everything is organized and we get back into normal, we will have that opportunity to be like that as well. But I think you're right, a lot of the anxiety is from not having that benchmark. So that value of the school year, I think we have to measure it from child to child. Where is that child at this stage? And it would be different from one to another. Yeah. If you think about the Scandinavian countries and things like that, they only start learning reading, right? Yeah. And doing the 3 hours at 7 years old. And before that, they are really focusing a lot on the social, sensorial, and maybe the communication skills. So maybe this is a time where
yes.
parents can actually do that, isn't it?
I was just going to say, education system is going to suit every child, right? I mean, and we've always spoken about this, that every child's going to be growing differently, and it took a bug to come and totally mess this up for our children. So there is a good thing in a way. I mean, if there's a silver lining, it's that we can now assess or benchmark children differently. Dr. Rajini, what are your thoughts? I mean, everybody talks about this as a lost generation. I don't agree. Do you?
No, I think we make them lost by setting those benchmarks. I mean, if we're going to stick to the old curriculum, yeah. And you know, I always say I'm blessed. Somehow the pandemic happened when my kids have passed those early years of primary school. I mean, it's been challenging for them as well, you know, in their secondary school and university. But if I'm looking at, you know, thinking about the kids, okay, if you look at academic learning. So the kids who have just started to learn to, you know, they went into school in 2020, starting standard one. I'm giving this just an example. Yeah. So they're learning how to write sentences. They're learning to read and answer questions. They're doing their arithmetic. And boom, the pandemic hits them. And if these are the kids who are going into year three, yeah, next year. And these are the kids who then have to start to write a karangan. Because I remember my year three daughter was writing short karangans at year three. When they're still, you know, I mean, as much as online learning teachers give, assignments, if you're not practicing the language, you're not, you know, having discussions that are long in classrooms, you know, how are you going to then move on to that level? So I'm using this as an example where I think teachers, when they go back, they cannot stick to the old rigid syllabus. And yes, you're always going to have the top 20 percentile who are going to cope. They're going to move on. They're going to be able to write their karangans. But what about the rest of them, especially that bottom 30 percentile, 30 percentage? Yeah, I mean, these are kids who may have actually slipped with their reading. Yeah, there was an interesting study that I think McKinsey did in looking at schools in America. And what they looked at was abilities according to age, race, etc. And generally, they said, okay, you know, the kids lost out. So if you look at math skills at the end of their school year in 2020, kids were 4 months behind their peers prior to the pandemic. Certain skills you continue, I mean, there's always a slide during the holidays, the long breaks, and then they go back to school and they hopefully pick up again. But, you know, school in America as well has been disrupted from 2020 to 2021. And when they looked, the kids are now, you know, 5 to 6 months behind their peers. So that gap is getting wider. And that's in a country that hasn't lost as much school as we have. But what they did say is when you look at the bottom range, the kids who are that bottom end of abilities, their slide is probably going to be greater. This is just looking at the average, you know, across the board. And if you, and there are other studies in the Netherlands, they did a study last year where they looked at, you know, just missing out on 8 weeks of school. And this is a country that's got good broadband, good access to online education. Even in a country like that, they found that the children who come from less advantaged backgrounds were 60% more likely to be, you know, had more 60% more problems with learning and catching up than their peers from more advantaged backgrounds. So what I'm saying is, I think, you know, in terms of going back to school, teachers are going to have to use different benchmarks to decide where kids are. And as Cheng Yi said, you've got to treat children differently. You can't say this whole batch, we have to repeat the whole year or whatever. You know, I think we need to address curriculums differently. And it's a good time to relook at things. Maybe year seven, when they get into school at seven, we're going to have to start with basic literacy skills. The kids who are more advanced, right, we can give them different sets of targets to meet. So back to differentiated learning in a school.
Yep, which is something we never really had, differentiated learning, isn't it?
Yes.
This might be a good time, but, you know, I somehow feel it's a far-fetched idea, Dr. Rajini. We'll come back and I want to know whether you really think kids will go back to school in October. Also, if you have a question on whether or not you're concerned about your child, the fact that they've missed 18 months of, you know, their schooling has totally been disrupted, should they repeat the school year, is what we're discussing. Call us. It's 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. Dr. Rajini Saravanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, and Tan Cheng Yi, an educational psychologist, on the line with me. We're discussing, should students repeat the school year given the pandemic and the disruption that's happened? Children are expected to go back to school in October, for exam year, students at least, and in phase two and three states. Do you both think that we will make it for October? Do you really think children will be able to go back to school gradually from October?
Sorry. You want me to answer this question?
Never
as a
mind,
mother?
No need. Your life, your laugh said it all.
As a mother, I'm praying that, that of course, that they are going to be allowed to go back, because I can see the effects it's had on my own child. And, you know, I think if school, I mean, it's a hard one with the number of cases as they are today. Of course, you know, there are some anxieties, but I have a much older child and I know she's able to follow SOPs. And I think as she's approaching an exam year, and I know she learns better face to face compared to online, as a parent, I would hope so, with schools following SOPs. If I had a younger child, I'm not so sure I would, if I would feel differently. As a medical professional, I think if teachers are vaccinated, and I think we can't, and, you know, I think the issue is that benchmarks set by the authorities has been so confusing. And I think that's what drives concern amongst parents, teachers themselves, because we keep moving the goalposts. We keep setting different benchmarks. You know, it's like this impulsive announcements that are coming out to please society. I'm not sure. And I think, you know, we probably need people, public health experts, to sit down and advise schools based on where they are, rather than taking a blanket approach to the whole country. So I know there's this phase one, phase two, phase three, but I'm confused. What are the benchmarks for phase two? Is it ICU beds? Is it absolute cases? Because if we were to follow what was announced before, you know, so...
We're far from the 4,000.
Forget
that number. 4,000 cases, no. We're at 24,000 today.
And I think maybe, you know, we need to look at also vaccination rates of teachers as well. So COVID's here to stay. I think we all realize that. It's when do we feel that our schools are safe enough? And you know, I think some schools are luckier than others. The schools that have 50 in a class, I'd be super anxious about my kid going back into the classroom. That's just overcrowding. Or those that have 40 in a class, but the class size is tiny. So I think people have to look at the infrastructure of schools as well.
Okay. What about the, you know, you were talking about the exam year students. Cheng Yi, what are some of the issues or challenges that they face after such a long drawn out disruption?
Yeah, I mean, if you talk about the academic side, that's is given if you don't have, you know, disrupted learning. But I think what I see and what I hear from the young people is more the the confidence, you know, and the motivation, and they feel very lost. I think the examination, some of the examinations like the UPSR and the PMR has been cancelled. And for so many years, you know, we use that as a stage, as a milestone, as a benchmark. And that has become sort of, you know, systemic in our society, even in the minds of our parents, that once that's taken away, we just don't know how. And I think teachers also don't know how to move the children on to learning. And I wish we could, you know, turn learning into something fun, right? For the rest of the year, since you don't have an exam, let's bring back the interest in learning. Let's engage better. Those kind of things. But it's not happening. So I would like to see better planning for those who are taking their examinations and a bit of clarity. I really feel that they have been really left out in the planning. And because of that, we are feeling aimless as parents, as educators, as well as, you know, just, yeah, as a professional, you know, people who come for mental health issues. How do you advise? We are just clutching at whatever is available to help them to feel motivated. And there's not a lot of options because our curriculum is just not designed to be delivered online. And all this postponing just gives, you know, it just doesn't gives any ability to have any targets to work towards. So I think the confidence is something that we need to bring back. The confidence that, you know, the government and the education system know what they're doing with our examination kits. The message that they're sending right now is that it's not so, they're not very important. Of course, you know, COVID is, our lives is at stake. But at the same time, this is, there are other damages that are really hard to be accounted for, hard to measure. So I really think a better planning and some benchmarking. I mean, it's some kind of proper, you know, this postponement, like Dr. Ranjini said, it's not helping. At least we can have somewhere to work towards and plan towards is going back to school, and teachers can actually get into action, stage one, stage two, stage three, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but somebody needs to draw it up.
Recovery plan, right? A recovery plan.
Correct. So how do, and teachers need to assess children, right? I mean, it's been so many months of not being in touch with them. They need to be reassessed. Dr. Rajini, how should they even start doing that? I mean, we need a whole education overhaul after this.
Yeah.
And what are we planning to do? Bring the kids back and try and go back to the old system that we have? That's obviously what we're hoping to do, right?
I don't hear any different plans, but I'm referring more to the younger kids again. I hope now with the abolishment of UPSR, teachers can now really sit down and look and see where gaps are in children's knowledge and things. And I think it's about going back. I mean, I don't want to, I know I keep talking about the less privileged and the children who are differently able, but you know, they make up a big chunk of our society. And if we look at the B40 group, the B40 group has grown, right?
We've some got people M40. Say yeah, we've got M40s falling into B40 now.
Yeah, so the B40 is probably a B60 now. And if you think about them being a huge chunk of our population and the kids coming from that group, and I would throw in the kids who are from T20, M40, who are differently abled into that group with the children who come from disadvantaged families, you got to make sure that their basic foundational skills, not just reading, writing, and arithmetic, but also social. Are they able to, integrate with their peers? Are they able to be friends, be happy in school? Are they able to sit through a whole classroom session? Are they able to participate in group activities? You know, those basic skills that are essential for school as well. Because primary school is when you work on those things before you move on to secondary school. And I always believe in primary school, it's about motivating children to want to learn. Yeah, because how do children learn best? As much as you send your child for tuition and for 6 hours a day after a school day of 5.5 to 6 hours, not every child is going to come back with the A's or the B's or even a C if they don't have self-motivation. and if they don't have that self-confidence. So it's about motivating children to want to learn, to find out information for themselves, to be curious about things, yeah? And that starts in primary school, because if you don't get that right, school and teachers are more focused on getting facts through, hitting exam targets, etc., and it's going to be harder. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, just to add in a bit with the exam years, I mean, one of the things that, you know, my daughter pointed out to me is it's not just, you know, yeah, you can meet your friends online, but when it comes to being motivated to learn, it's classroom discussions, which are different when they're on Zoom. It's the fact that after the teachers left the classroom and you go to your friend and say, how did you do this? And you help each other and you start to form your little study groups, you know, and during, you know, staying back while waiting for your parents, you have little discussions, little things like that. And just being happy seeing your friends makes you want to learn as well. Yeah. So that goes for primary school children as well. Yeah. So I think, yes, maybe teachers need to look at basic 3 R's again, or the 3 M's. Yeah. And also look at the other social development of children when they go back to schools for them.
As much as we want to see differentiated learning, we want to try and motivate children to want to learn. It's going to take an entire shift in our mindsets when it comes to education on all, you know, from all stakeholders, right? It's just not parents, but teachers and policymakers and everybody. Mm-hmm. And that sounds like a huge task that we have. So I'm going to assume that we're going to move on to the same system that we've had in place. So we are going to encounter the challenges that you have mentioned. But should parents assess whether their child should really move on to the next level? I think is what we really want to talk about after this, because should they be repeating 1 year? I mean, I remember in my time, you're repeating 1 year, it's a big no-no. You're like an outcast, you know, like, goodness sake, how can you repeat 1 year? You know, you either skip one grade, that's fantastic, but you never repeat a year. But, you know, in a way, it affects the child, especially at a time like this. When you have to stay back 1 year, it's demoralizing for the child. There's so many questions as to why they've had to stay on when their friends have actually moved ahead. So we'll come back and have that discussion about whether or not your child should move on to the next level, because there have been some suggestions to the Ministry of Education to allow students to repeat that school year. We'll come back and talk about that. Give us a call if you have a question. 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, online with us. Also joining us, Tan Cheng Yi, an educational psychologist, talking to us about should students repeat the school year. So let's get into that question and trying to answer that. How should parents assess whether or not their child should move to the next year, whether it's is it academic milestones? Should we be looking at maturity? Should we be using the same parameters of the syllabus to assess our children's readiness for moving on to the next level? Dr. Rajini, what are your thoughts?
If we're talking about children who previously were deemed to be typically developing without any issues with learning due to different abilities, etc., they don't actually have a choice about moving on to the next year. In our education system, I think you need to have a medical reason why you need to repeat a year. So in the past, children who've been hospitalized, you know, for treatment of cancer, or they've had a significant illness that required them to miss school, they can get exemptions to repeat the year. For children who have delayed development for whatever reason, or issues with learning, they can appeal, so write in to the Ministry of Education to request to start school a year later with a supporting letter from an allied health professional who deems that they are. And most of these children probably have to be read, you know, in the past they would quite often request that the children are registered as OKU or disabled. Yeah. In recent years, it seems to be a case-by-case basis. So children who don't have OKU registration, the ministry decides based on a case-by-case basis. So it and that's for children, and then we're talking about delaying that years, usually for children who haven't started school yet. So they are six, they should be moving on to year one when they're seven, but we write in to say we recommend that this child be delayed for an extra year because he's just getting his basic literacy skills, or maybe socially he's not ready, or behaviorally he's not ready, and we write in to request, and it's up to the discretion of the Ministry of Education whether they grant it. So for most parents, they are not going to be able to make that decision or request the school to do it. And the schools also will have to probably say to parents who request that their child repeat a year, they're probably going to turn around and say, I'm sorry, you can't, because the law is such, unless you get a professional's letter to prove, and then we need to request it through the channels and go through the Ministry of Education. Those whose children are being homeschooled or they attend private schools, that again depends on the school itself. Certain schools allow it, and certain private schools, again, they would often want some backing from a professional to say that this child is required to repeat a year. So, you know, seeing someone like Cheney who does an assessment, etc. So I think for a lot of parents, it's going to be very tough to request that. If I were a parent, I would probably, if parents ask me about their typically developing children, and some have, when they come along with their children who are actually seeing me, they do ask me this question. And what I say to them is, if you are really very anxious about this, if you are worried, you can do one of two things: get private professional assessments. Number two, you can maybe consult the Ministry of Education has a center called the 3PK Center, which is a center for children with special educational needs. They provide consultation. So you can maybe contact them and see whether you can get your child assessed. I can imagine they're going to be swamped after this. But, you know, I think those are some avenues that can happen. Correct me if I'm wrong, Chingyi. I'm not sure what your understanding of the education system is.
Yeah, I mean, the way you've explained it, it just shows the complexity this is going to take, right? If we were going down this route, because it is not in our culture to have that flexibility to go into a different level of learning or to be helped, you know, repeat the school year, those kind of things so easily.
But Chingyi, I just wanted to ask you, earlier on, one of you said that children are resilient. Are we overthinking this? Will they be fine just moving on to the next level?
Yeah, I really think that this is very case by case, but I think the planning needs to be there to allow for the different abilities, the differentiated learning and the flexibility, as we said. So maybe they are not left behind in everything, you know, they could be left behind in mathematics or in science, but they're okay, you know, the English has always been strong. So why do you hold them back 1 year, you know, when they're going to be like half bored in school or in class, and they're going to create other issues? I think it's not a decision to be taken lightly, and possibly it's something that you have an open and honest conversation with the child, the parent, and the school to actually, you know, address those individual cases where this is needed. And a child's views needs to be taken into consideration, especially if you are somebody who is going into like the secondary school. You don't want to be left behind and not be in the same year as your peers. You know, so die also, you want to, you know, how behind us, so you just want to be your friends, right? So I think that's the thing that we should listen to what children are also saying. So I think this time is time for parents to maybe to not just evaluate academically, because I think that's very easy because you can take the books. We have a curriculum, a set curriculum, whether you're international school or homeschool, there's curriculum that you can sort of benchmark your children. But maybe it's the maturity part, you know, because your emotional part side of you to be able to cope in the next year with kids who are older or can you cope with being in a group where the kids are shorter than you and smaller than you, and you feel so awkward, and people say, why are you in this class, and how come your birthday is so different, you know? And those kind of things are what we need to take notice of, because that maturity of the child is quite important, and how it affects the child. I generally don't like to see children being held back. If anything, they should be helped to be at their level, right? Of course, saying that, we talked about grades and, you know, it's a benchmark, you know, it's not like it must be like that. Everyone is different, but it's a guide. And because society sees it as you have to be there if you're at that age, so it makes a difference for the child. Yeah.
And Dr. Rajini, do you want to add on to that?
Yeah, I think if you look traditionally, for example, children who come from vernacular schools, what tends to happen when they go into secondary school is they have to move, many of them, if they don't pass Bahasa Malaysia, they have to go into the remove class. And I think there's always been a concern that kids who end up going to remove class drop out of children from vernacular schools in secondary schools is much higher than children who have come from kebangsaan schools. And those who've been through remove have a higher rate of dropout compared to those who don't go through remove. Am I making sense?
Yes.
So basically the kids who are held back because they didn't pass Bahasa Malaysia are more likely to drop out of school, and also because they then lose motivation to some extent. Now, people would argue that, maybe these kids are not bright, but that's not true. Some of them actually have done well in other subjects, but just because they didn't pass Bahasa Malaysia at UPSR, they have to move on to remove classes. I think what Cheng Yi pointed out was very important. We do not encourage actually holding back children, especially midway through primary school and secondary school. Yeah. And I think it's also important, especially when you're dealing with primary school children, if they have got, if they've got the basic concepts there, why hold them back just because they haven't gone up a level? I mean, we have the whole of 6 years of primary school to build on that, as long as their basic building blocks are there. And I think, again, it's going to come down to how we benchmark them. And again, you know, just to reiterate what Cheng Yi says, we need to look at the social aspect of it as well.
What is your advice, Cheng Yi, to parents who are facing this dilemma now?
I think they need to also manage their own anxieties so that it doesn't pass on to the children. I think we are just anxious overall. You know, and I think it first starts with us because I think we model a lot of it to our children, what we think of them, and we're worried that they're behind and things like that. Then, you know, we're going to be very anxious and naggy and it won't really help them. It's going to put additional pressure and, you know, and we're not helping them with any solid solutions to their problems. So I would say that, you know, we should really take an interest, yeah, as much as possible in what is happening to their children, whether or not they are coping with what's happening at school. So look at it more holistically, not just from the academic point of view. See how whether that during this time they've had a chance to even mature in being independent. So when they have had to transition to online learning, there's a lot of new skills they have had to learn. So they've had to, you know, manage your own timetable, turn on the thing, be there, pass up homework. And sometimes if you're not there listening to what the teacher is saying, you're going to miss out. So those are some of the things that you can pay attention to. And that's a good measure of whether your child is maturing, because as they grow older, they must be more and more independent in their own learning. Yeah, so they're able to take charge by themselves. I think the other thing is they are able to solve their problems. So they're not always running to mommy. The little ones, you know, they cry when they don't know what the teacher is saying and they feel that, you know, they don't know what to do. They lose their homework, book, things like that, you know, and that they're emotionally better at controlling themselves. I think those are the soft skills that we don't always appreciate, but it takes time for a child to learn that. And it goes all the way throughout life, right? Those are the building blocks that you require in life. You could have lots of certificates, but if you can't work with deadlines, you can't manage your time. Yeah, it's not good.
Dr. Rajini, your advice?
I think, you know, for parents out there, I think manage your expectations and your anxieties. Know your child, and you know, and remember that children can grow and develop. It, what they're capable of now isn't what they may be capable of in the future. And the most important thing is ensuring that your child feels confident in what they're doing and trying, is motivated to try new things, to face challenges and not give up if they do fail. And this is where parents play a bigger role, especially in when they're in primary school. You know, I mean, it's harder when they get to the teenagers, but if you have kids in primary school, this is the time you want to encourage your children, motivate your children. And I think, you know, the pandemic has affected everyone. So just because your child's fallen behind doesn't, you're not alone. And this is where parents need to now advocate for their children, not individually, but parents in groups, you know, within your own community, your own school community, work with teachers to try and find the best solutions for your children moving forward. I think we can all look towards the MOE to come out with policies, but at the end of the day, MOE comes out with a policy that is sort of overall.
Yeah.
But within each school community, if you work together, parents and teachers, you can try and see what works best for your school community and not just follow the rigid rules and policies that have been rolled out. Yeah, as long as you're not radically changing the curriculum, I think MOE is not going to turn around and say you can't do that. So we all have to be a little bit flexible, think out of the box, and try and do what's best for our children because they are our next generation.
Can we have you on all our school groups, Dr. Rajni Chengi? The country needs you.
No. As a parent, I was a very vocal parent.
Which is always
in
a
primary
good thing.
School.
Always a good thing.
Yes. Yeah. But you know, it's not about arguing with the teachers. It's about working with them, trying to find those best solutions. At the end of the day, the teachers want what's best for our kids.
Yeah.
And even they are constrained by what they have, you know, what resources they have access to. So, yeah.
Thank you both very much for sharing your thoughts with me today. Dr. Rajni Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, and Tan Cheng Yi, educational psychologist, speaking to us about should students repeat the school year? And I'm assuming that answer is not really. You don't have to, but you need to look at your child individually as to how they have actually grown, matured, areas in which non-academic areas that you should be assessing as well. Thank you both again for joining us today. This has been Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.